Good evening. You are listening to Aspen Public Radio's 2018 election coverage. I'm Allison Bektesh. All week, the Aspen Public Radio news team is bringing you candidate interviews and breaking down the local and state ballot measures that you will be voting on. Get informed and then mail in your ballot. On tonight's show, you'll hear candidates for State Senate District 5, for State House District 26, and for State House District 57. Also, Garfield County's libraries want to keep all the revenue they collect, and a look at the state's transportation and education funding measures. Stay with us. Incumbent Carrie Donovan is running for Senate District 5. She spoke with Zoe Rome about her experience as a senator and the challenges facing the district.
What distinguishes you from your opponent?
There are a lot of things that differentiate me from my opponent. We have very different opinions on the cause of global warming. I think that it is indeed caused by mankind, and therefore it is our responsibility to address it and seek solutions for global warming and the impacts it has on our sea communities and river communities and agricultural communities. So that's a pretty stark difference. We also have some differences of opinion on how we should address the education funding shortage we have in the state right now. I think it's very important that we find ways to invest in our classrooms and our kids, as well as pay teachers a living salary that I think they deserve. And I do not believe that my opponent shares that same opinion, that it's time to really buckle down and invest in our schools and our kids.
What kind of big ideas and issues that are maybe really important and relevant in District 5 kind of go overlooked in the Capitol?
So representing this district is a wonderful challenge, and it's incredibly hard. And I enjoy it so much because you end up being a single voice for many diverse issues. Denver alone has 4 senators, and then I have 7 counties that only have 1 senator. So I not only have to be the voice for the issues that directly impact my district, but in that process, I have to educate many of my colleagues on the realities of the challenges that we face in Senate District 5. So a perfect example is healthcare. When we started talking about the rising cost of the individual market in Senate District 5, there were a lot of comments from my colleagues of, well, it's just everything's more expensive in Aspen and they choose to live there, so this shouldn't be a problem that we work on. And so it took quite a bit of one-on-one discussions and work within meetings with other groups that work in healthcare to explain just the severity of the problem of the high cost of healthcare before we could even start to think about running a bill that we would have success. So, any of the issues, distances to schools is a thing that I've spent a lot of time educating my colleagues and friends on. When I went to school, I had a 45-minute bus ride. That's quite an absurd thought in a metro or a suburban area. So just the differences of almost every issue and how it impacts us when things are just a little bit more spread out here in Senate District 5. And we just have different economies and sometimes, different values and cultures.
That was incumbent candidate Carrie Donovan speaking with Zoe Rome. Her challenger is Republican candidate Olin Lund. He spoke with Zoe about his hopes for the rural Senate district.
All right, and my first question is, what distinguishes you from your opponent?
My experience in campaigning around the district has been a lot of people are frustrated with the voice of the rural district. And I want to represent, I want to be the voice of the people in the rural district, in the rural Senate District 5, so that we don't have our voice lost above the end of what's going on in the urban districts of the Front Range.
So what kinds of big ideas and issue that are really important here go overlooked in the Capitol?
the issues of the private property rights, of the economy of this area, certainly a big issue in Senate District 5 is healthcare, public education. And my wife is a school teacher, has and currently teaches online. She has taught brick and mortar in the past. The things, the ways that, that public education is affecting our communities, things that we can do to make it better. Those are primary things that people are concerned about. There are a lot of other things, jobs, the economy. Those are suffering, I guess, particularly in the western side of the district, but in Senate District 5, the rural areas. The representation has become a big part of the representation, has become the voice of the urban districts, the urban areas, the Front Range areas, and that's what the State House is hearing.
So what is your background and why are you running?
I was county commissioner. I was county commissioner in Delta County for 8 years. I was on the local Delta Montrose Electric Association board, president of the board, secretary treasurer of the board. I was also on the Colorado REA board. I was born and raised here. I now, along with my brother-in-law, I'm running a farm that's been in my family for 100 years, or farm and ranch. I was asked to basically run for this job by several different people because they're frustrated with not having that voice in the State House. I've been involved. I was on the CCA. I was involved with their I was a vice president of their ag, their rural affairs, ag and wildlife committee. So experience is a big reason. And people wanted me to do this since I was term limited out as county commissioner to represent them and be their voice.
So what are the big issues on your platform?
The big issues are we've talked to a couple of thousand women that their big issues are health care. Certainly that's a big issue across the board. Also, public education is second, but it's a very close second of being a big issue. Those are the big things that we're looking at right now, that we're finding and talking to people.
That was Zoe Rome speaking with Olin Lund, Republican candidate for Senate District 5. She talked to both candidates in this race and joins me now in the studio. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Allison.
Zoe, can you tell me a little bit about Senate District 5? What are the big issues in that area?
Yeah, well, as you heard in those interviews, it is primarily a rural district. It includes Chaffee, Lake, Pitkin, Eagle, Gunnison, Delta, and Hinsdale counties. So it's pretty expansive geographically. It's also pretty evenly split politically. According to the Colorado Secretary of State's office, there are about 27,000 registered Democrats, 28,000 Republicans, and 36,000 unaffiliated voters, so there's no clear majority and a lot of independent voters. Going back to what the candidates said, there's definitely some major themes at play here. Both candidates mentioned healthcare, education, the environment, and affordable housing as being big parts of their platforms.
Okay, so these candidates, for all their differences, they do have some things in common?
Yeah, so both have connections to education. Donovan had been a teacher, and Lund's wife is a teacher, so they both have pretty personal connections there. Donovan really emphasized the need for better funding for schools. Lund, however, doesn't think it comes down to money. He was less specific about the issues there. Other similarities include healthcare. Lund emphasized price transparency and access and wants to bring more community clinics to rural areas.
One thing that's really big in rural areas is broadband. Did that come up?
Yeah, both really want to push to bring broadband to rural communities. The drop in coal prices hit communities like Delta County pretty hard, and Lund cited using broadband to inspire more tech-based economic solutions like startups to combat a flailing economy. Donovan was more interested in broadband's uses in education and rural connectivity.
Can you tell us a little bit more just about their backgrounds?
Yeah, they both come from pretty rural backgrounds. Donovan has worked on her family's ranch, and Lund has lived and worked on the Western Slopes, specifically Paonia, for years. They've both worked in state and local politics, and before running for state office, where she's now senator, Donovan served on Vail's town council. Lund served two terms on Delta County's Board of County Commissioners and is currently a Colorado Water Commissioner.
Okay, so how do voters separate them? What in what ways do they differ?
Yeah, well, they are very different candidates, and they have really different approaches to environmental issues. While in the Senate, Donovan passed a bill to gather data on climate change, and that's a big part of her platform, and she really pushed back on Lund's reluctance to attribute climate change to human interventions. Lund comes from a more resource-centric background. He did work to modify an irrigation dam on the Gunnison River, which enabled passage of both endangered fish and recreational boaters along the river, and he cites that as evidence that he can work to bring consensus among environmentalists and farmers alike.
All right. Thank you so much, Zoe.
Yeah. Thanks, Allison.
Zoe Rome speaking about both candidates running for State District 5. You can hear their full interviews online, aspenpublicradio.org. You are listening to special election coverage from Aspen Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Garfield County ballot issue 6A would allow the library district to keep all the revenue it collects. Garfield County libraries were funded $139,000 last year, and they're looking at an even bigger loss this year. That's because Colorado's Tabor Amendment limits the amount the government districts like the libraries can grow. Arts and culture reporter Kristen Kay paid a visit to the Carbondale Library to learn more about the impact 6A would have on libraries and taxpayers.
You might think of libraries as being pretty quiet places, but there's a lot of action at the Carbondale branch this Wednesday afternoon. Kids are flooding through the doors after their early release from the Roaring Fork School District. They head to a community meeting room in the back for lunch and art projects. In the library itself, patrons sit at every available computer. A toddler searches the children's section for anything truck-related.
Where are all the books about trucks?
And of course, people are checking out books.
Believe it or not, people still read paperback books.
That's branch manager Lacey Dunleavy. She points to the new release rack at the front of the library. It has a lot of empty spots. The books that are there are labeled with their release dates. Some came out 9 months ago. None are more recent than June. Dunleavy says she sees more than just partly full shelves when she looks at the new releases.
I think what you're seeing is an interested community that sees the library as a valuable place to go and learn and get new things.
Young adult literature, for teens like those here today, is among the highest in demand, as are new books for story times with babies and toddlers. But the libraries have had to trim their budget for new books because they had to refund money to the state last year. They're funded partly by sales tax. Colorado's Tabor Amendment sets a baseline each year for how much sales tax government districts can keep. Anything above the baseline has to be redistributed to property owners. It was put into place to prevent government from overstepping its bounds. Garfield County sales tax increased last year, partly due to tourism and money from the oil and gas industry. Sales tax is projected to go up this year as well. You might think that a strong local economy would be good news, but Todd Anderson, the president of Garfield County Library's board, says he has mixed emotions.
And you feel great, the county's generating more sales tax, but then that secondary feeling of, are we growing too fast? Are we going to have to give some of that back? We receive it, and then at the end of the year, they say, well, you have to give it back. That's tough.
Last year, Garfield County property owners received an average of $1.50 back from the library district. Added altogether, the impact is big on the libraries. Anderson says when you don't know if you're going to have to give money back, planning a budget is a struggle. There have been cuts to the collection budget, what they set aside to buy new books, ebooks, and audiobooks. That's where Anderson says the money from 6A would go.
If the measure passes, our collection budget will double from our current budget. So to us, that's huge.
But why not spend the money on staff? Garfield County libraries have had to cut positions and hours recently. Anderson says they need predictable funds to hire more people. The money they retain from 6A would change from year to year because the amount of sales tax they collect would change. Dunleavy says another reason to spend the money on materials is to give directly back to the community.
We exist to put resources, whether that's a tangible thing you hold or a computer, in our libraries to the taxpayers. And we're just hoping to put more of that money back into their hands.
She says that even if people don't carry a library card, libraries fill a lot of different needs in communities in ways that people might not know.
Whether you ever step foot in our building or not, I can assure you that you know someone that's used one of our study rooms, that has had a class assignment and had to run over to the library to check out the book, our fax machine, our make some copies, or even our book sale room.
Both Anderson and Dunleavy say that services and hours won't be affected if 6A doesn't pass. But Dunleavy acknowledges that, at some point, budgets are about setting priorities. And with an uncertain budget and potentially larger and larger refunds every year, she wonders how they will continue to serve lots of different people.
You're seeing a lot of different needs that have to be met, and that's our job. But then how do we keep that going?
That's a question that could be a lot easier or a lot harder to answer after this election.
Thank you.
No problem. Have a great day.
Kristen Kay, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Thanks for tuning in to Aspen Public Radio's special election coverage. Tune in each evening at 6 p.m. for more about the candidates and issues that you will be voting on this fall.
Hi, I'm reporter Wyatt Orm, and thanks for tuning in to Aspen Public Radio's special election coverage. House District 57 is made up of Garfield, Moffitt, and Rio Blanco counties. Republican Bob Rankin currently holds the seat. He's being challenged by Colin Wilhelm, a Democrat who's a first-time political candidate. I spoke with both Rankin and Wilhelm on a variety of issues. Here are a few of them. We'll start with Colin Wilhelm speaking about education.
It sounds like you think that teachers deserve a raise.
I do. Currently in Colorado, we're almost dead last. I think we're 46th or 47th in teacher pay. And the western slope is just as bad as the Front Range in teacher pay. And we need to pay our teachers more so they're not leaving and going to Wyoming or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Why are they leaving in your estimation?
Cost of living is high out here. And then they're also not making enough money to support that cost of living. And you go to places up north in Moffitt and Rio Blanco counties, and the teachers can find a job, but their spouse can't find a job. So that causes them to leave, even if the teacher pay there is good enough to support their cost of living, which it still probably isn't.
Okay. But so regardless of whether or not their spouse can find a job and regardless of whether or not other places can pay more, what can our elected officials do to ensure that teachers make more money?
Well, in the state legislature, we can use more of the general fund, earmark more money to the counties and to the school districts, and then earmark it for teacher pay. Currently, a lot of the money for schools is going into infrastructure and building of our schools, and that is very good too. But really, to have a good functioning school, in my opinion, you need three things. You need a good quality building, you need good quality education and textbooks and materials, and then you need a good quality teacher who's earning a good quality salary. We have the first two. Now we need to get the third one paid. There's still allocation for money in the marijuana fund, is my understanding, that we can use for teacher pay. And I would be fine with raising taxes to increase teacher pay.
Here's incumbent Bob Rankin.
Education is not doing what it needs to do when you look at the fact that only 40% of our kids can read at third grade.
Hmm.
I shouldn't say it exactly that way. They don't pass the test to read at grade level.
Gotcha.
When we send kids to college, 40% of them need remediation. The workforce continually says we're not training people in the right way for the job market. A big issue right now. We know early childhood is disorganized, and many of our kids go to kindergarten unprepared, or first grade. So those issues we really need to understand where you can make a difference.
Yeah.
Where are the big silver bullets that can really help?
Yeah.
That's not what we do.
But wouldn't you say there are arguably more kind of immediate concerns than out-of-the-box thinking, changing the system, changing the education system? I mean, you had hundreds of thousands of teachers who descended on Denver earlier this year to say, we're not being paid enough. Are they being paid enough?
You know what? I'm on the Joint Budget Committee. I've advocated for more money on education. We put $666 million more dollars into K-12 education than we had the year before.
Yeah.
And what did we get? We got teachers protesting that we're not doing anything. I mean, I don't mean to sound defensive about it, but look at what we're actually doing.
For teachers who live in the House District 57, who teach in your district, are they paid enough? Yes or no?
No.
How are you going to help solve that problem?
We're going to continue to put more money into education.
But from where?
From the general fund budget.
That was incumbent Bob Rankin from State House District 57. Here he is again speaking on health care.
If you go out to buy an individual insurance policy, you will pay some of the highest costs in the nation.
Why is that?
The state has divided itself into 9 regions and calculates differently what the rates would be in each of those. And the insurance companies then come in and negotiate with hospitals based on those cost calculations. So that's part of it. So there are really two things that we need to work on. One is that we have a very unfair situation. We pay 40% more than the Front Range. The other one is the underlying, you know, long-term tackling of cost and transparency of cost.
Yeah. So we pay 40% higher, costs that are 40% higher than those on the Front Range, because there's a lack of competition, because there are fewer providers. Why are the costs so high?
Well, those are both contributing factors. To a large extent, we don't actually have enough transparency to know, and we're working on that. I ran a bill last year, it didn't pass, to get transparency of hospitals. We have a plan in place. It's 3 to 5 years. And working with a consortium of the hospital association, doctors, everybody, to try to get at that. I think we'll make some progress, but that's a longer-term deal.
Yeah.
Short-term, I'd like to fix this disparity, and I've run a bill to have one insurance rate statewide. That would cause our rates to go down about 30%. However, the rates on the Front Range would go up 5%, so I didn't get it passed.
Here's Democrat Colin Wilhelm, who is Rankin's challenger.
Health care is the care that you get when you go to your provider. Health insurance is the antiquated way that we pay for that health care. I'd like to see health care transparency, and I would like to reduce the health insurance costs. We should start with a flat rate across the state, and then we can move on from there to try to figure out other means. Ultimately, I would like to see us move to a universal healthcare system in the state of Colorado.
Okay. The problem is that it costs too much to get healthcare in Western Colorado, right?
I agree.
And so what are ways that you would hold healthcare providers accountable to make sure that they're not taking advantage of lack of competition or what have you?
That's an excellent question. And by healthcare transparency, they have to provide you the price of the procedure, the price of the doctor's visit, or the price of anything that they're providing you prior to you receiving that. The same way when you go to a restaurant and you order a hamburger, you know how much that hamburger is going to cost. That should happen in the healthcare field too.
Okay. So, and is that just a matter of you proposing a bill and sort of advocating for regulation that doesn't currently exist?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, we have to work with the health insurance companies as well to try to bring in another health insurance company as an option. Currently, at least in the Garfield County area throughout the valley out here, you only have one option as of the last enrollment period. So more competition from another health insurance company at this time would help lower costs.
When you say basically that, like, it'd be better for everybody if there was more competition for health insurance, how can you engender that?
Well, we have to work with the health insurance companies, and we have to reach out to them and try to work to bring one of them in. We can't go in the state legislature and dictate that companies have to come here and sell health insurance. That won't work, and I don't necessarily believe it might be legal either. So we need to work with them and incentivize them to talk with them, try to bring them in.
Here's Colin Wilhelm, Democratic candidate for State House District 57, speaking about the extractive industries.
I'm not an unapologetic supporter of the oil and natural gas industries. That doesn't mean I'm anti-oil and natural gas. What I am is somebody who believes that currently we have a very good industry base here with the oil and natural gas in Western Garfield County. I don't want to get rid of that, but we can't be dependent on them. I want to bring in renewable energy to work in conjunction with the oil and natural gas industries. I in no way want to get rid of the oil and natural gas industries, but we need to bring in new industry. We can promote our outdoor tourism a lot stronger. We can bring in wind and hydroelectric power along our rivers. We can bring in solar power. I think that all of these will help us weather any downfall in oil and natural gas or coal industries or agriculture in the next coming decades if we do it properly.
And here's Representative Bob Rankin, a Republican who currently holds the seat.
I represent the Piceance Basin, second largest deposit of natural gas in the United States. I represent three coal mines. I don't care how strongly I feel, and I do feel strongly, that we should evolve over time to more renewable energy, as much as we can, given that we don't put too big a burden on the taxpayers as we do it, right? I believe that. At the same time, I represent a lot of people whose livelihood and certainly property tax base depends on oil and gas. So it's my job to be their representative in having a long-term plan that protects them, their jobs, and their communities, at the same time being sensitive to climate change. And, you know, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I have to walk the line. I mean, that's my job.
Yeah.
You can't represent this district unless you do.
How do you work to diversify rural economies such that they're not beholden to natural gas prices?
If you suddenly, precipitously close down, you know, oil and gas, you're going to really hurt property taxes. It won't hurt jobs as much. From a jobs point of view, we're doing pretty good in diversifying. I don't know how we get away from property tax values. We've learned to live, you know. We've kind of learned to live with, you know, good times. I mean, although it's off now, we've got good reserves in Garfield County, Rio Blanco County, because of that. I don't see any immediate replacement for property taxes from oil and gas and coal.
That was Bob Rankin speaking about the extractive industries in Rio Blanco, Moffat, and Garfield counties. Rankin's challenger is Democrat Colin Wilhelm. You can find full interviews for both candidates who are competing for the House District 57 seat online at aspenpublicradio.org. Thanks again for tuning in to Aspen Public Radio for our special election coverage.
You're listening to Aspen Public Radio's special election coverage. I'm Allison Bechtesh, and I'm here in the studio with reporter Wyatt Orme to talk more about the interviews we just heard with the candidates for State House District 57. It's in the northwestern corner of the state, comprised of Rio Blanco, Moffitt, and Garfield counties. Hi, Wyatt.
Hi, Allison.
Incumbent Bob Rankin is a Republican. His challenger, Colin Wilhelm, is a Democrat. Beyond that, how different do you think these candidates truly are?
Obviously, philosophically, they're coming from different places. When I spoke with Colin Wilhelm, for example, he mentioned universal health care. Bob Rankin did not mention universal health care. But they both agree that health care is too expensive in Western Colorado. And they both think that if all of Colorado were on one insurance rate, that Western Colorado would pay less. So I think that they've identified a lot of the same problems. And I think that they think pretty similarly about some of the solutions. They both think that teachers should get paid more and that the money should come from the state's general fund. They both think that undoubtedly there's a place for the extractive industries in House District 57, but they also think that the future is in renewable energy.
Okay, so that extractive industries, that brings up Proposition 112, which would require increased setbacks for new oil and gas development from neighborhoods and schools. How do they feel about that?
They actually fundamentally disagree on this question. Colin Wilhelm is satisfied with the evidence out there that says that if you live closer than 2,500 feet from oil and gas development, you are at an increased rate of cancer. Bob Rankin wants to see more evidence, and he is in favor of gathering it. Colin Wilhelm thinks that if 112 passes, that oil and gas companies, even if they have to stay 2,500 feet away from neighborhoods and schools, they're still going to be able to make money. Maybe they're not profiting as much as they are now, but nonetheless, they're not going to just suddenly leave Colorado. He points to directional drilling. He points to a lot of technological advances that the industry has made. Bob Rankin says, no way. If 112 passes, it's going to devastate the oil and gas industry here, and that in turn will devastate some of the services that we rely on, services like fire departments, for example, who get lots of money from oil and gas companies paying property tax.
Are there any other ways they differ that voters should be thinking about as they sit down with their ballots in hand?
I think I need to mention that Bob Rankin is in the midst of trying to get the Gallagher Amendment repealed. The Gallagher Amendment, it's complicated. I'll do my best to explain it in very briefly here. As the Front Range explodes with population, the state's overall property assessment rate goes down, and it hurts us on the Western Slope because so many of our services that we rely on depend on property tax, as I mentioned earlier. As far as immigration goes, Bob Rankin said that all that he can do really in support of comprehensive immigration reform is to lobby the federal government, which he says that he's done. He was in favor of getting in-state tuition for the Dreamers, the kids who have DACA, but he thinks that a lot of it comes down to working on an individual basis. Colin Wilhelm, who I should say does practice immigration law, says that he's interested in reducing the time that someone can serve for a misdemeanor. It's currently 365 days. If someone is undocumented and they're in jail for a year, even if they have a misdemeanor, they are still automatically subject to deportation. So Wilhelm thinks that if you were to just slightly reduce the amount of time that someone can serve for a misdemeanor, you're going to get a lot more of the undocumented community in Colorado participating in the justice system. People will feel less scared, and that overall the state will benefit.
Wyatt Orme spoke with both Colin Wilhelm, a Democrat, and Bob Rankin, a Republican, running for State House District 57. Wyatt, thank you so much for summarizing that for us.
You're welcome.
Colorado voters will see two items on the ballot this fall for funding transportation projects. They both find a way to pay for road construction, but each one goes about it differently. KUNC's Matt Bloom dug into Propositions 109 and 110 and breaks them down.
To understand why there are dueling transportation funding questions on the ballot, you need to go back in time, specifically 27 years ago.
Remember 1991? George Bush was president? No, the other one. The Soviet Union was still a thing.
As this campaign ad also states, it was the last time Colorado raised the gas tax to 22 cents a gallon to pay for road projects.
So let's go, Colorado. Vote yes on 110.
The gas tax hasn't been an adequate source of funding for a long time, meaning more and more projects had to be put off to the point where now the state faces about a $9 billion price tag to get its current to-do list finished.
The reason we really strongly support Initiative 110 is it raises about $767 million a year.
Kelly Bruff is president and CEO of the Denver Metro Chamber of Commerce. 110 would raise the statewide sales tax from 2.9% to 3.52% for 20 years to pay back up to $6 billion in bonds. The funding would be divided among both state and local governments for projects.
The truth is, we need to pay if we'd like to improve our quality of life in terms of our transportation experience in the state of Colorado. And we have a strategy where you pay very little and we can get huge improvement.
We don't know what we're getting with this tax increase.
That's John Caldera. He's with the libertarian think tank Independence Institute, which is backing a different proposal.
We don't know what transit projects, we don't know what the cities will do with their slush fund. It brings in a lot of money, and we're not certain.
That certainty is exactly what Caldera is flaunting as the edge for Proposition 109.
It tells the Department of Transportation to bond for $3.5 billion to put be used for 66 specific projects around the state. And it says you will get going on all these projects and you will not raise taxes or fees to pay it back.
109 is also bluntly called Fix Our Damn Roads. It's also a 20-year plan. Caldera says its biggest strength is that it's been done before.
It's not a new idea at all. In 1999, then-Governor Bill Owens was facing a similar situation.
The state was flush with surplus money, but none of it was going toward roads. So Owens, a Republican, put forward a bonding question, the Transportation Expansion Project, or T-REX. It added extra lanes to I-25 south of Denver and more than 19 miles of light rail track around the city.
And it worked beautifully.
But Bruff says the downside to Caldera's plan is that the money to pay back the bonds is not identified and would have to come from somewhere else in the state budget.
Most likely, we believe you'd have to take it either out of higher ed. Our higher ed funding is 48 out of 50th in the country. Out of our K-12 system, we're 55% of our school districts currently on 4-day school weeks, so they're probably going to have to go to less. And out of health care.
With both campaigns critical of the other's approach to the funding issue, the situation begs the question, what if voters pass both measures?
It's a wonderful intellectual question, but I don't see that at all.
Kelly Bruff's campaign also doesn't see it working out that way.
And so I think what you'd invite is a lot of legal wrangling about what you get to spend your money on in your local community. And we think that should be their decision about what's most important.
Neither Bruff nor John Caldera want to think about the other possibility, which is neither question passes. But if so, state lawmakers have a backup plan. They have a question on deck for the 2019 ballot that would ask voters to bond about $2 billion for transportation projects. I'm Matt Bloom.
Hi, I'm reporter Kristen Kay. Thanks for tuning in to Aspen Public Radio's special election coverage. Colorado State House District 26 is made up of Eagle and Rout counties. Three candidates are vying to represent District 26 in the State House. Incumbent Dylan Roberts is a Democrat. He was selected to fill the seat when it was vacated last fall by Diane Mitz-Bush. Nikki Mills is the Republican challenger. There's also a third candidate in this race, Independent Luke Bray. I spoke with all three candidates for State House District 26. You can find the full interviews online at aspenpublicradio.org. During our conversations, I asked all three candidates to highlight the most important issues that they would focus on if they were elected. First, Democratic incumbent Dylan Roberts.
By far the number one issue that I have been focusing on in my short legislative career and will continue to focus on is the cost of health insurance, particularly the cost of health insurance in the Colorado mountains. Our counties face some of the most expensive rates for premiums if you're buying on the individual market. And so I had several bills last year that would have provided both short-term relief for families struggling with those costs, as well as long-term structural change to try and bring more competition into the insurance market up here and across the state. And I look forward to continuing those efforts, and that will definitely be a priority for me should I be reelected. And then this another priority of mine is the overall cost of living in the mountains. You know, like I mentioned, I was lucky enough to grow up in this district, and I've gone away and got educated, and I came back, and I want to try and make a life and have a family and buy a home here. But I realized how hard that can be in our mountain counties. So I want to do everything I can to have the state be a better partner for our local governments, our local businesses, and our local nonprofits to make this place more affordable to live. So that means making the state a better partner on things like affordable housing, childcare, public transportation, and things like that. And then overarching all of this is, as somebody who grew up here, I love the natural beauty of this place. We all do. That's why we live here. And a lot of times our water and our environment are need to be protected. And so I want to do everything I can to do that.
Can I ask you more about the bills that you brought as far as health insurance?
Absolutely. So one bill that I brought was the short-term relief that I talked about. This was a bill that would have provided some financial assistance for families who don't qualify for any sort of federal stipend because they make too much. But in our mountain counties, that's still not enough to cut it oftentimes to buy health insurance. So any family that was paying more than 20% of their health of their monthly income for health insurance would have gotten a stipend from the state to help them buy a health insurance plan. The long-term structural bill that I was talking about is a really exciting idea. It is a bill that I got bipartisan support on at a Republican co-sponsor in the House, a Democrat and a Republican senator in the Senate. And it would have studied how to implement a program to bring more competition into the insurance market. So it looked at instituting a public option or what's called a Medicaid buy-in, or some sort of health insurance co-op where local businesses, local nonprofits, or some sort of group organization could gather together and negotiate for an insurance plan for their members. These are things that, like I said, got bipartisan support and are starting to be recognized across the country as solutions to our skyrocketing health insurance costs. And I was proud to bring that bill. It passed out of the House with a really big bipartisan vote and unfortunately went to a Senate committee where it died on party lines 3-2. But I've been having conversations throughout the summer about that bill and about those ideas, and I think we'll see some action on it next session.
That was Democratic incumbent Dylan Roberts from Colorado State House District 26. District 26 is composed of Eagle and Rout counties. Next, Republican challenger Nikki Mills on the biggest issues facing the district.
I would say the top issues in our area is the cost of health care and insurance, and then also the lack of affordable housing, and education is something that is really important to the people in my district. Those are three top areas.
And can you expand on those? What would your plans be for those areas?
Well, as far as like education goes, I really think that having the schools that we have here, preparing students to go out and be prepared to be active members in our local workforce. Right now, we're kind of a pipeline for serving the resort industries. And I would like to see the schools prepare students to get maybe higher paying quality jobs and preparing students for jobs that might not even be available today, but in the near future. So that's something regarding education that I would really like to see. And for healthcare, there's a lot that can be done regarding transparency. Like, there's not many businesses out there that you walk in the door and you have no idea what it's going to cost you at the end of the day when you get done doing business with that business. And in the healthcare industry here, the lack of transparency makes it a big surprise what your bill is at the end of the day. So I think that being able to shop around for services and having transparency is really important. I'm also interested in collaborating with other organizations around here that are working to allow small businesses to come together and be able to purchase better insurance plans, and that would be something that is provided by the small businesses for their employees. I have a lot of friends around here that aren't able to afford healthcare, and they're sitting at home sick instead of going to the doctor because they're afraid of what it's going to cost them. And those that are enrolled in healthcare plans are paying, you know, what might be close to a mortgage, several thousand dollars, for example, for a family of four. That's per month. And these high costs attribute to the people no longer being able to live and stay in our areas. They move here, maybe they get married and then have a kid, and now they're forced to leave because they can't afford the expenses to be able to stay in the Vail Valley. And that really breaks my heart. I'm really sick and tired of going to my friends' going away parties.
Another issue that you mentioned is affordable housing or the lack thereof. Can you talk about plans or what you would do for that issue?
Yes. As far as housing goes, I just spent Saturday at a Diva Day building with Habitat for Humanity in dots or gypsum. And, you know, it's such a big issue around here, affordable housing. And I really liked what Habitat is doing, but they're building maybe 6 to 8 houses a year, which does not make a big dent in the problem that we have. And even if we were able to build more affordable housing, the problem is going to continue because more people will move here, and it's a supply and demand issue. And I'm really happy with what is currently happening in Eagle County. There are a lot of builders who have projects in the works. And one of the problems I see, though, is working with the county or working with the local towns, governments, that it delays the process. And whenever there's a delay, that ends up costing the builders more money. So as a leader in the House of Representatives, I would want to help work between the builders and the local governments to speed up that process, to reduce the amount of delays that end up being so costly. And I think that's really discouraging to developers, because what, you know, they're trying to do their best to provide more affordable housing, and then it becomes too expensive, and those projects then are set aside, and they would rather build, you know, multi-million dollar homes and make more money on it. So I think that we need to do things that would make it more encouraging for builders and developers to get involved.
Thanks for tuning into Aspen Public Radio's special election coverage. That was Republican challenger Nikki Mills, a candidate for Colorado State House District 26. District 26 is composed of Eagle and Rout counties. Finally, unaffiliated candidate Luke Bray discusses what he sees as the most important issues facing the district.
Well, I'm hearing about, like, every day, healthcare. Our healthcare costs are crazy, and we're paying some of the highest healthcare in the state, and it's not really fair to the hardworking folks here. I mean, when people have to decide between putting food on the table or medicine for their kids, it's, you know, it's ridiculous. It's sad. And I wish there was an easy answer. You know, it'd be nice just to find the guy that was causing healthcare problems and let him experience the healthcare system. But it's not that easy. There's a lot of working parts, and it's going to take a lot of people working together, which is so important. We got to have both sides working together to figure this out. And it shouldn't be, you know, a partisan ideology that creates the solution here. We all got to be on the same page. That's going to be a lot of work, but I think we can achieve it.
What can both sides collaborate on specifically that could help healthcare costs, especially in the high mountains in Colorado?
Well, I think there's the healthcare industry, that there's a possibility that they're making, you know, politicians take sides and making it a political issue when it really shouldn't be. I mean, there's lots of things that we can do, like co-ops, for example, and other things like that. I mean, there's so many avenues and stuff that I haven't even wrapped my head around. I mean, I'm not going to claim to be an expert on it because the experts are continually wrong. So maybe that the fact that I'm not an expert might give me a fighting chance to try to figure this out.
What's another issue on your platform that's important to you?
Water. Water's been coming up a lot. And I've seen changes in water just growing up here. I remember my brother and I going up to the hills like in July and August and having snowball fights. And we knew then that, you know, that's kind of the holding tank for our agricultural system in the spring. And now that's gone away. I can't take my kids up and have a snowball fight in July anymore. So, and I think it all really ties together on protecting the environment and doing what we can. And then also educating people on how precious our waters are. You know, we have a lot of new people coming in that aren't really familiar with how important water is and what our waterways do, not only for our state, but the surrounding states as well. So education is going to be really important in the future.
I'm reporter Kristen Kay. That was unaffiliated candidate Luke Bray discussing the most important issues facing State House District 26. Two other candidates are vying to represent District 26 in the State House of Representatives: Democratic incumbent Dylan Roberts and Republican challenger Nikki Mills. You can find the full interviews with all three candidates online at aspenpublicradio.org.
You are listening to Aspen Public Radio's special election coverage. I'm Allison Bektesh. I'm here in the studio with reporter Kristen Kay to talk more about those interviews from the candidates for State House District 26. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Allison.
District 26 covers Eagle and Rout counties, so it includes Elgibel and parts of Carbondale. What did you hear during those conversations with Dylan Roberts, Nikki Mills, and Luke Bray that distinguishes the candidates from each other?
Well, Dylan Roberts is the incumbent, and he talks about his experience in the State House being a real benefit when it comes to having some specific plans to address issues in Colorado and in District 26. Both Republican Nikki Mills and independent Luke Bray are kind of the opposite. They make a point of saying they're not politicians, and they say that's their strength.
And as we heard, the top issues that each candidate sees facing their district do differ.
A little bit, yeah. Dylan Roberts and Luke Bray both mentioned protecting the state's natural resources. Nikki Mills did not mention the environment, but did discuss education. She feels like schools need to do a better job of preparing students for jobs, even jobs that don't exist yet. But there is a lot of overlap in what the candidates feel are the biggest challenges facing residents of District 26.
Sure. They all mention the high cost of housing or just living in the mountains and the cost of health insurance. But even though their concerns are the same, what they would do about these things sounds like it would be a little bit different.
Yeah. Dylan Roberts is the incumbent. As I mentioned, you heard him talk about those bills that he brought this past session, that one that would support families who are paying more than 20% of their monthly income for health insurance, and the other that he mentioned about businesses and governments forming co-ops to negotiate for lower insurance rates. Neither one of those passed, but he did say that he'd continue working on those two specific plans.
Okay, and then what about the challengers?
Luke Bray and Nikki Mills definitely feel that, yes, insurance is a problem as well. As far as what they would do about it, Bray says he would mainly focus on collaborating with both sides of the aisle to come up with ideas, and Mills discussed potentially increasing transparency from insurers on costs. You also heard about cost of housing from Nikki Mills. She sounds frustrated with what she sees as the government hindering developers on housing projects. She feels like governments shouldn't really be in charge of maintaining rural character of mountain communities, and instead government really should plan for growth in those areas.
Kristen, thank you so much for speaking with these candidates and giving us this rundown.
Thanks, Allison.
Colorado schools have a funding problem. State dollars for education have decreased over the last decade, leading to a teacher shortage, increased class sizes, and the inability to hire other support services like bus drivers. But voters will have the final say on an ambitious amendment this November that could help solve the problem. For Aspen Public Radio, Stephanie Daniel has more.
Amendment 73 would raise $1.6 billion annually through a tax increase on corporations and individuals and families earning over $150,000, which is about 8% of state residents.
Oh my gosh, this is game changing. This would be the best increase in
public school funding that we've been able to get in decades in Colorado.
Kathy Kipp is a member of the Poudre School District Board of Education. She's raising awareness about the amendment at a back-to-school night event at Cruz Elementary School in Fort Collins.
If you have any questions, let us know.
The revenue would go into the Quality Public Education Fund and be split among all school districts, allowing for local control over how the money is spent. Lisa Weil is the executive director of Great Education Colorado.
Every community has different demographics and different geographics, and so it's where the decision should be made and where the accountability lies.
But critics, like Michael Fields, take issue with that. The executive director of the conservative advocacy group Colorado Rising Action says school districts don't have a good track record of wisely using the funds they already have.
So I think that we need to fix our current system before asking people for more money.
Increasing income and corporate taxes isn't the only thing 73 would do.
And actually, if they had stayed with income tax, I wouldn't have made a peep.
Steve Miller is the Larimer County Assessor.
Property tax is something I know about, and they really kind of mess things up, you know, in a serious fashion.
So this is where things get complicated. The Gallagher Amendment already regulates the amount of property taxes that are collected on residential and non-residential properties. Amendment 73 would add additional rates for both that school districts can collect. So a property owner would have two tax bills. Money from 73 would go to schools, and Gallagher dollars would fund public services.
Public education in Colorado is certainly a strong force, and it's important, but it's not the only important thing that the state funds.
And those tax rates would be fixed, while Gallagher's residential property rate would continue to drop. Miller says this would have unintended consequences, like decreasing money for things like paying firefighters, especially in rural areas where property values aren't that high. And homeowners may end up paying more in the long run. But Lisa Weil says the amendment would create a steady stream of funds so school districts won't have to rely as much on the state.
So that there's not less and less local support and a greater amount of backfill that has to come from the state general fund.
Do you know about Amendment 73?
Back at Cruz Elementary School, Kathy Kipp is focusing on what could be done with the additional revenue.
It would go a long way to creating a more adequate and equitable and sustainable education funding here in Colorado for all of our public schools.
In her district, some of the money might be earmarked for increasing teacher salaries and mental health support. But she says the first step would be having a conversation with the community.
We've got a long list of priorities.
But for Michael Fields, who agrees teachers should be paid more, this long list of priorities doesn't mean much.
You know, $1.6 billion tax increase that basically doesn't guarantee any student achievement growth. And you talk about teacher retention or, you know, attracting new teachers. I think they need to be a lot more specific than they are.
As Election Day nears, backers of Amendment 73 face a problem outside of their control. 73 could get lost in a crowded statewide ballot, which will include questions from about 20 local communities that also plan to raise property taxes to increase school funding.
Thanks for tuning in to Aspen Public Radio's special election coverage. You can hear the show again online, aspenpublicradio.org. Reporters Wyatt Orm, Kristen Kay, and Zoe Rome contributed to this production. Tune in tomorrow at 6 p.m. as candidates for Picken County Sheriff and Assessor face off. Ballots were mailed on November 15th. You can find our comprehensive election coverage online, aspenpublicradio.org, under the Elections tab. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks for listening.